Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Yes, we know the words here on the NOLA Drinks Show. We're familiar with the words to the Declaration of Independence. Yes, we are. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we try here on the NOLA Drinks Show as we explore the world of food and drink in New Orleans and beyond to contribute to that in a tiny and small little way, just bringing you some knowledge and some information about the world of food and drink here and drinking food and all that good stuff. And we talk about New Orleans, as you know, and we talk about other stuff. And so there you go. That's what we try and do here on the NOLA Drinks Show. If you're not familiar, check us out at noladrinks.com. Go visit us on Facebook, all of that good stuff. Got an interesting show coming up for you here today. We are going to chat, as we have been lately, with Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, about the state, further conversation really about the state of the restaurant business, with a particular focus on independent sit-down restaurants and also here in New Orleans, that type of focus. But we'll get to that in a minute. A couple other things I wanted to highlight, some events that are coming up here beginning this evening. Let's start here. If you're looking for something, if you're listening on the radio, listening here on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans, I appreciate it. And if you're listening to the podcast, wherever you may be, I appreciate that too. If you're listening here on the radio, it is, of course, Thursday, July 6th. And by the way, I hope everyone had, if you're here in the United States anyway, that everyone had a safe and wonderful 4th of July and Independence Day. Maybe got some time to reflect a little bit on things. It's obviously a day that we here in the United States like to enjoy cookouts with the family, shoot fireworks off, do some of these things, maybe drink a few beers, that kind of thing, enjoy the swimming pool, maybe whatever you like to do. But of course, it's a serious day that requires serious reflection. And in these times, as in any times in this country, there is always a need for self-reflection about what it means to be a citizen of the United States and a citizen of the world. There you go. That's all I'm going to say there. But tonight, then, here you go. It is Thursday, July 6th, if you're listening on the radio. And immediately following the show, you can listen to the show. We go until 5 p.m. here, Central Time. And then after that is over, you can head right on over to Pearl Wine Company from 5 to 7 this evening. They're located at 3700 Orleans Avenue in the American Can Building. They've got a free sangria and wine tasting going on. Every Thursday, they do tasting. Features different things, I believe, coming up maybe next week, if I remember correctly, or 2 weeks from now. They're going to have Buffalo Trace whiskey out there, a few other things. So we'll talk about that a little closer to the mark. But this evening is a free sangria and wine tasting. They'll also have Italian food by a pop-up called Nicolina. And let's see, Ghost Tequila is going to be there. I guess they're going to do maybe a tequila version of sangria, it sounds like. So there you go. Could be interesting. And then they're going to have some bubbles going on. And the Crescent City Farmers Market happens right there in the parking lot from 3 to 7. And then after, I believe, at about 8 o'clock, they're at Pearl over in the bar side. So there's a retail side on one side, the bottle shop. On the other side, there's a bar where they do wine and cocktails and all kinds of good stuff. And they always have music. And so, yeah, go do a little free tasting. Go do a little shopping there at the farmer's market. Check that out. It's always good summertime. Got a lot of great produce going on. Go taste some good stuff. Then go hang out in the bar over there at Pearl Wine Company. And always check them out. They're doing a lot of construction there at the American Can Building along the lower layer, which is all retail stuff. And that's great. It's fine and good. It's going to be a nice facelift for the building. But go support those local businesses, including Pearl Wine Company. When you see all that plywood in front of the windows and things like that, they are open. That great selection of wines back there, all that good stuff is still there. So go check it out. It's always tough. We're very familiar with that, of course, in New Orleans, the idea that construction and what that can do to business right now. If you're from the area, you probably know this already, but there's a major renovation, I believe the first in about 90 years, going on Bourbon Street, sort of block by block heading up Bourbon Street. And right now the construction, I believe, is between the 200 block. So the first and second block down from Canal Street, the major thoroughfare right there running perpendicular to Bourbon, if you're not familiar, and they're doing resurfacing. But this is sort of the first major redo of the sewage and plumbing lines, as I said, in about 90 years, if my understanding is correct. And so there's always lots of issues, of course, in an old city like New Orleans and in the French Quarter, where, you know, water comes up out of the ground sometimes when you don't really want it to. And the type of water coming up out of the ground, you really don't want it to be that type of water. And it's all, but point being is it's always inconvenient for these things. It can be really tough for the businesses. That project apparently is running a little bit late, as most of these projects do, as we're talking about the project at American Can. And so, you know, it's summer's tough. Summer's a tough time. We all know that. And that's going to be what we're going to talk about a little bit more in the show here. You know, it's a time of year. We've talked about it quite a bit. We've talked about the restaurant business quite a bit. That's what we've been focusing on using this topic. But really, the summer months here in New Orleans, tourism continues. And I think we've seen, I've talked about this before on the show, I think we've seen a lot of folks still come to town in the summer months. Of course, we have, you know, Essence was just here, great crowd, Tales of the Cocktails coming up in not too long, which is a great bartender and spirits industry event in about 2 weeks. We have Satchmo Fest celebrating Louis Armstrong in August. So there are things that bring people to town. And then there's a lot of budget tourism, I think, that comes to town, a lot of regional travelers. But these are, you know, sometimes just different demographics or short shots in the arm, and it's still tough for businesses like independent sit-down business or sit-down restaurant businesses, as we chat about, that you know, you got to spend a little bit of money, and if you're in town for a week and you're on a budget, maybe you go to a place like this once in your stay, for example. So the convention business, for example, slows down. That is in the demographic that supports a lot of these places. And just bringing it back to what we're talking about with, say, the construction on Bourbon Street or the construction there at the American Can building on Orleans Avenue, that can be really tough because the summer months are slow. And, you know, Pearl Wine Company, like using them as an example at American Can, they're a neighborhood wine shop. But, you know, you've got the school expenses coming up. People go on vacation. I'm sure they do draw some people that are staying in town that come to certain events and pick up bottles there to bring back to their hotel room, these sorts of things. And then you say, look at the folks on Bourbon Street, which is almost entirely tourist driven for the most part, except maybe in the summer when we do depend on locals, but people going out, that can really put a kibosh on people wanting to go. And it's like the construction on Bourbon Street's not particularly attractive. The street's kind of hemmed in and all of that stuff. And I realize it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. The work certainly needs to be done, at least to some degree. And this is probably the best time to do it because it will disrupt the least. But I guess on the same thinking there on the other side of the coin is if you are already kind of a little thin in your margin and these sorts of things coming into the summer months, and then you get the slowdown, and then you add another hit from the construction in front of your business, it can be really hard. And I don't really have any other point. There is no good time to do these things, but, you know, just being sensitive to that and, you know, bringing that back to some of these places, you know, go support them. They're open. Okay. Maybe you got to park around the corner and walk a little further. Maybe, you know, it's not so great to look at a piece of plywood in a window, but hey, you're just going to like grab a bite maybe, or, you know, pick up a bottle or something like that. Not that big of a deal, friends, to kind of overlook that stuff and go support, buy local. We need this in the summer as well. Friends, as I mentioned, a really good show coming up, as we have been doing, talking about the restaurant business as an ongoing topic. I'm sure it's something we'll hit in the next week or month or two before the end of summer, at least a couple times. Robert LeBlanc, a frequent guest on the show who discusses the restaurant business with us in a very open and candid fashion, is here. It's a very lengthy interview. I do want to give you that heads up. We get in depth pretty far. We talk about taxation. We talk about potential effects of crime and the perception of crime in New Orleans from those looking in from the outside, some effects of that on the convention business, the summer slowdown, how to sort of make a lemonade out of lemons when you have some opportunities in the summer, maybe when the business is a little slower to do things, staff development, engage on a deeper level with your customers, in particular your local customers, which can really keep you going in the summer months. Again, Roe is a very honest, candid guy. So we'd like to have him as a regular guest on the show talking about the restaurant business. If you're interested in, like, we did this a couple weeks ago where we talked about this topic, and we try and push it forward. We circle back on a couple things. But if you go to noladrinks.com and check that out, and if you look at one of our tags there in the blog, it's always filed, if you will, under restaurant business. You can check it out that way. Very interesting conversation with him. So I do hope you find it interesting. There are some difficult things we talk about here. So yeah, it's a tough time, and we're pretty honest about it. So we're going to take a little break here, friends, on the Nola Drink Show. When we come back, we're going to be here with Robert LeBlanc from LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group. Come on back.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Goodbye, Joe. I gotta go. Me oh my. I gotta go. Pull a hero down the bio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in to the show today. As you know, if you're listening here on a Thursday on the radio or if you are listening to the podcast, we actually taped this segment on Monday, July 3rd. Over here at Cavin. We are uptown in New Orleans, and we are at a fine establishment, Cavin, and we're chatting with Robert LeBlanc, proprietor of said establishment. Robert.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good to see you, man,
as always. Good to see you, man. Thanks for... I mean, this is a Thursday, right? It's July 3rd.
Yes. Yeah, something.
Could be a Friday.
It feels like that.
Yeah.
When we were actually coming across the bridge today, as we do, Sylvia, my lovely wife, who is here helping out as she does, we were talking about who's going to be somewhere, and it's because it's Tuesday. It's not even Tuesday yet.
Not even Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's a Monday where you feel encouraged to have a frosty beverage. In the afternoon.
Absolutely. And then you guys have your company party coming up on July 5th, which is going to be a lot of fun. So it's kind of like a really long holiday weekend.
Yeah. Are we being honest here? Just in the happy nest?
Yes.
Circle of trust? Trust tree?
Yes.
I'm scared to death of that party, man.
Well, go tell us why.
It's open party.
Open bar. Yeah, at the Drifter Hotel.
A pool. There's a reputation that's a topless pool, just not a lot of upside coming from that whole deal.
Some of those parts I did not know.
Yeah,
I was starting to worry about drowning incidents.
Worried about that too. So I'm a little nervous about that one. I think that was an aggressive call. And now that I'm 40, man, I'm the old guy.
Just had your birthday, yeah.
Yeah, so it's. So now I'm the creepy old guy at a pool party.
At a pool party.
Scary.
Yeah. Is everyone that's on staff required to bring their Red Cross card and show some competence in their swimming ability? Or that or water wings?
No, but Martha from Sylvain, as you know, who is mother hen of the whole company,
yes.
Swears she's cooking for everyone and she's not drinking at all to make sure that everyone behaves and is safe.
Oh, okay.
And the reality of it is if Martha looked at you the wrong way, you're going to be scared straight anyway. So it's actually not, it's probably the best person to do that.
That makes a lot of sense. We're talking about Martha Wiggins, executive chef over at Sylvain, one of the sister restaurants here of Cavin. And yes, I've had that look. She's given me that. Oh. She's given me that look in as recently as the past two or three days.
Yeah, I get it twice a week, man. Mm-hmm. You could never be immune to it. So I'm not going to purport that I am, but yeah, I've at least learned how to manage it.
Very specifically, Robert, when she gave me that look a couple days ago, we were talking about, and this actually is a relevant topic. We have Tales of the Cocktail coming up here in New Orleans, as we know, in the more or less the third week of July, and you've been gracious enough to allow me to set up during some of the days, during the weekdays, and do some interviews with people that are in town, and I was talking to Martha about it, and I think Martha was a bit concerned because I think she thought that I was, was going to need like food stuff, and I was doing some sort of event or something. I said, no. She's telling me this, and so that's when I got the look. And I said, no, I just really need a place to put a few microphones like we're doing here today and interview people for maybe an hour and a half block during the day. So then the look kind of came off her.
I love the fact that I love the fact that you folded.
I totally folded, man.
You and I know we wanted food at that deal.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, change that program on the fly.
And, you know, your general manager over there, Teddy Blumenthal, came over, and Teddy was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to send you an email, because I guess you had reached out to Teddy to let him know what I was up to. And Teddy's like, oh, yeah, no problem. And then Martha came over, and I got a little scared.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had my hand in the cookie jar, like I was going to take something I shouldn't be taking. And, you know, and being in the way, I'm like, Martha, you could just sort of put me anywhere, like in a table in a corner as far away from you as I need to be. And
she's awesome. She gets stressed for tails. She gets stressed for everything when I'm involved, when you're involved. Rightfully so.
Right.
She's not wrong, by the way.
No, she's absolutely correct.
And tails is an incredibly busy week in the city, but it's really busy at Sylvain, and you're dealing with a bunch of people who have tremendous knowledge of food and beverages, and so she really cares. She wants to make sure that we represent Sylvain and the city of New Orleans really well. So she gets super, super stressed out during that week. And Martha's pretty even keeled. She's pretty low key. Yep. She doesn't stress easily or frequently. But yeah, tails every year, man. She wants to make sure she nails it. So I apologize for throwing you into the hornet's nest on that.
That's all right. You know, and we're making Martha sound like she's this terrible, like domineering, brutal, you know, school marm type person, and she is far from that. She's an absolute gem.
She's amazing.
Of the human being.
She's amazing. Yeah.
And what's,
but she could also make a minnow slap a whale.
Yeah, right. That's very true. Well, let's touch on that, man, real quick. So we were talking about Tales of the Cocktail, and this will be salient to what we're talking about a little bit later. Because as we do, if you're a regular listener of the show, which I hope you are, you have been a recurring guest on the show talking about the restaurant business.
Sure.
And we're going to do this at least another couple times through the summer. Summer can be tough months here in New Orleans, and that's a lot of what we're going to talk about in the business today. But Tales of the Cocktail, just to go off on that segue a little bit, Tales of the Cocktail does provide a bit of a shot in the arm in what is generally a slow season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge proponent of Tales of the Cocktail. I know it frustrates people to some degree because they feel like you have a bunch of people coming to New Orleans who are being judgmental and being difficult and all those things. And I kind of feel like that's the wrong lens through which to look at this thing. Tales of the Cocktail, and we were been involved in bars in New Orleans before Tales was really a thing. While there are elements of it that are sort of frustrating to some degree, naturally, as there are with any festival or any festival-going crowd.
Yep. And one in the service industry, as you said, so it's very service industry intense.
For sure. But you're bringing 25, 30,000 people to the city of New Orleans for almost 8 days who are really dedicated to and committed to trying food and drink in the city. And so it's a real boost to particularly independent restaurateurs and bar owners like ourselves who don't have super deep pockets or super large lines of credit to kind of pull you through really slow months. And so everybody knows summer is notoriously slow, but that week of Tales of the Cocktail can be your highest grossing revenue week and benefits you twofold. So first of all, you get a huge shot of adrenaline in terms of revenues to your business in literally in the thick of the summer, the dead of the summer, which always helps.
Right.
Second thing it does is it does bring a lot of people to town from interesting bars and restaurants from other parts of the country, and also some great media to town. And so if people kind of wander into your space or pop into your space and have a fantastic experience and say they're a restaurateur or a chef or a bartender or a bar owner in Portland or Phoenix, they have a great experience, they're going to go back, and every guest that they talk to that is going to New Orleans, they're going to give them this in-the-know spot,
right.
And it's your spot. And so it's important both in the short-term revenue generation, but it's also important in the long-term kind of the ability to sort of brand your bars and restaurants to get people to recommend others from their hometowns who might be coming to New Orleans throughout the year, and a lot of people come to New Orleans throughout the year, right? So I think it's really, really important, particularly in the throes of such a slow summer, for all of us to understand the benefit, because I know it's easy to kind of take a little bit of a negative approach, and it can be frustrating, and you know, there are a lot of standards and rules around tails, the people who organize the convention themselves. Right. And I understand that's frustrating, but that's all for a purpose. And the end result, the greater good, is 25 to 30,000 people coming to New Orleans. It's literally the hottest point of the year.
Those are good points that you all brought up, and I want to highlight that a little bit or make sure that people understand, because lots of times what I think also occurs is with members of the service industry, so folks working for you, right, people behind the bar, people serving tables, people in the kitchen, they don't necessarily get the opportunity to participate in Tales of the Cocktail much, because it's long shifts and it's hard work. you know, and there's a reality there, because I think people, oh, Tails is coming to town, isn't that great for you? On a, personal development level, it might be a little bit tough for folks because they actually don't really get to go, or maybe parachute in little bits here and there, but they're not attending the conference. But the other point too about you, you're talking about the revenue and being a shot in the arm in revenue adrenaline, as you said, it's also good for people on the team because these are good tippers that come to town.
Absolutely.
And so when your tips are down and you don't have as many shifts and some of these things that are going on, this is actually a good way to kind of bump up your revenue in the middle of summer to get you through until fall starts when you got to pay rent.
Absolutely. Good tippers, great peer groups, yep. Right? And so you'll meet some people who are kind of high maintenance, maybe a little frustrating, but you'll meet some people who are amazing and incredibly complimentary. And a lot of times, some of the most accomplished people in our industry who are coming to town are typically pretty gracious, graceful people. You yep. don't become as successful as they are by being jerks. And so you get the opportunity to develop a really strong network of peers across the country. And those relationships, we, you know, Thomas Thompson at Barrel Proof, it's not just through Tails, but he's got a fantastic network of friends. New York, Chicago, yeah. And he can go to any major city in the country at this point, and 50-50 chance he gets a great bartending shift, which basically subsidizes his trip.
That's right, know? And so you do the guest bartending shift, yeah. And some of that kind of yep. stuff goes on sort of on and off the grid with Tails the Cocktail, and that's sort of, I think, what you were mentioning earlier about official events and non-official events and so on and so forth. Let's do this, Ro. Let's take a little break here. We're going to come back. We're going to get into the topic a little further about restaurant business in the summer, but I wanted to touch on Tails the Cocktail because it is right around the corner, friends. And overall, for all of its foibles and what it may or may not be, it's actually a good thing for New Orleans and
for
it's
sure,
a good thing
man.
For our businesses here. And
particularly for the independents.
Absolutely. And we're going to get right back into that, friends. So come on back to the NOLA Drink Show. We'll be right back.
French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market. Making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
Everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. As you know, we are here at Cabin Uptown on Magazine Street in New Orleans, a fine establishment. And we'll get there in a little bit, talk a little bit more about Cabin. We're visiting with Robert LeBlanc, who is the proprietor of the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group that operates Cabin. And Ro, this is the first time we've actually done the show here at Cabin.
Yeah, man.
We've done the show at Mo Bar a couple times.
Yep.
One of the other restaurants in the family. And yep. I guess then we're going to have to do, we'll do some at Tails at Sylvain, as we know, because we were talking about that before. And then we'll have to do something at Barrel Proof, but that means that I have to sit with Liam.
Yeah, we can figure that out. You know, we can get him out of town. We can send him on an R&D trip.
Okay.
You know?
That works good.
Like De Niro and Pacino. You guys can be in the same film, not the same scene.
I like that. That's a good idea.
We can do that for sure.
All right, I appreciate that.
But it's nice up here during the day. It's not like it's the good light. I don't really sit in the dining room here very often during the day. I'm always here at night, but I like it.
It's really nice. This is the dining room here, folks, and you can always go to our Facebook page, and you'll see some of the stuff on the website if you're attached to the podcast. So we're doing, you know, little bits of video and little bits of other things going on here. It's a beautiful space, Ro.
And, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a 1880s built. Is that right?
1883.
Yep. 1883. Yeah, and so a mansion here uptown that's been converted into a restaurant, and it's a very friendly and inviting place. And well, let's talk about this now since we're on the subject. So it is very friendly and inviting place. Kind of different than a lot of the uptown establishments, I think, in vibe and presentation and in some ways.
When I appreciate you saying that. Yeah. I appreciate that. You know, coming after Sylvain and Mobar and Barrel Proof, it was important for us to distill the DNA that makes those places work. And I think part of that is all of those places have a great sense of hospitality, hopefully really good food, drinks. But it's really about the joie de vivre and the hospitality and kind of that edgy sense of fun that's mischievous. It's not dark in any way. And I love uptown. My wife and I live uptown. And there's some amazing restaurants. Some of our favorite restaurants are uptown. But I do feel like it was important to have a place that was a little bit edgier, a little bit more fun, a little bit more casual, not compromising the food standards whatsoever or the cocktail standards, but just relaxing a little bit in terms of how we approached hospitality and how we programmed the room so that you might be listening to Van Halen while you have an amazing meal as opposed to listening to classical music. But it still presents for someone who dines out uptown on a regular basis, you would come to Cabin and feel comfortable. But for our clientele, our patrons, and our guests and friends who come from downtown, you would also feel right at home. You wouldn't feel like it was that much of a departure from what we're already doing with Mobar and Sylvain. And that was really important to us. So I appreciate you recognizing that and saying that. And again, we're amongst some great restaurants.
Yo, not knocking anybody.
Several it's beard winners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Within us, if I had any kind of arm and could throw a football, I could hit a lot of the beard winners with a football. But that's not to say there's not some amazing restaurants. But it was important for us to be a little bit different. And as you know, we get a tremendous amount of support from the hospitality industry itself. Most of our best guests, you know, our peers in the industry.
Right.
And so we do all the things here that we do downtown. We stay open an hour later, really accessible price points for everything so that our friends in the industry can afford to eat here once a week, as opposed to it being kind of an occasional place, which I think you run into uptown a lot as well.
Have you seen, let me ask you that, because again, we're sort of circling around some of what we're going to talk about further here today, but I've, and maybe I'm imagining this, Have we seen on balance some of the price points with some of your neighbor restaurants come down a little bit uptown? There's a spot, which I'm not going to name names here, but somebody that is just up the street a little ways, a few blocks, that to me, I remember going back 2 or 3 years and looking at their menu. Maybe they changed the menu items themselves, but the typical entree price was about $35, and I'm seeing it seems to be on balance closer to $28. You know, $5, $6, $7, $8 less.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I can't answer that question specifically because we have this weird thing. We don't really believe in competition. We, you know, we believe we're part of a community, and so we need to support everyone. Right. And we also believe that if we're doing the best work, based on what we could be doing potentially, that we're okay. So we can win while someone else is winning. But if someone else is losing, that doesn't necessarily mean we're winning. And there's been plenty of times where we have not performed well. We've been losing while someone else next door or across the street was also not performing well and losing as well. So we don't really look at that clearly. So I can't answer that question literally, but I would say hypothetically, it makes a lot of sense. I think that what has happened with food is it's become certainly something that many more people are familiar with. And I think that you have to be able to provide value. I think people want really good food, really good drinks, but I think they understand what value is now. And that happens as a result of increasing competition, increasing awareness. So it would not surprise me if that was the case, but I will say that we have always operated under that assumption that you got to kind of have most of your entrees in that mid-20 range. If you have a piece of fish that's special, you can put it at 30, maybe 31. But for the most part, you know, you have to keep it to where it's really good, but it's still at a value because people understand those things. You're doing really savvy consumers.
Right. Yeah, well, and I think too, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. What strikes me, I come from the San Francisco area, and San Francisco is not cheap.
Right.
And so you would go out, you know, to dinner in San Francisco and some of these, really anywhere in Northern California, Wine Country, Carmel, any of these spots. And if you go to fine dining and even some casual fine dining places, it is not shocking to see a $45, $50 entree. I think New York's the same. I think Chicago is the same to a certain degree, And I guess where I'm going with this question then is, this is New Orleans, and I think it's a little different. It seems to me that there is a little bit of and there are some exceptions with some of the restaurants in town, the ultra fine dining here, but it does seem to me that there's a little bit of a glass ceiling, that when you go too far on the price point for entrees, that it's problematic. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair. I mean, I think every place sort of has a different approach and a different philosophy. I think the difference between Wine Country and, I don't know if this necessarily applies in New York, but a lot of markets where you see really expensive restaurants sort of flourish is you can't go 6 blocks down the street and get a fantastic po' boy from Guy's for $9.
Right,
And that's a real choice. And those are choices that you and I make on a daily basis.
Exactly.
So I think that has something to do with it. I think that another part of it is, you know, this is a town that worships trumpet players and cooks.
Yeah.
So if dining were a sport, we have some really savvy fans here in the city of New Orleans. And so that's the other thing is I think people understand what things can cost and what they should cost. And I think that you can charge a price that a consumer, a guest, would consider a value. And I still think it could be profitable as long as you're minding your P's and Q's, as long as you're looking at your labor as a commodity, your cost of goods is a commodity, and just sort of paying attention to the numbers on a daily basis and not being irresponsible with that.
Smart with your sourcing. Also,
absolutely.
We talked about that a couple of weeks ago on the show, is the benefits of sourcing local in a lot of ways is that you have fresh, you're supporting the local economy, can actually be cost advantageous in certain ways to maintain fresh goods as opposed to, you know, it's the quality is there, but the cost is not exorbitant when you're, you know, we're not trucking in stuff from Chile in the off season as much.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, a more limber menu allows you to, you know, change your ingredients based on what's fresh and what's in abundance at the time during the season.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of things that you can do to keep that value proposition there. There's an interesting, it's a parallel because it's also the hospitality industry, but Ian Schrager, who is often widely credited with inventing the idea of the boutique hotel here in the United States of America, he just opened a hotel in Manhattan, and it's getting a ton of buzz because it's a 330-room hotel, and his room nights are starting at $150. And so, this is a hotel that would have probably historically charged $400 to $450 a night because of the name recognition and the whole deal. And he's got this really, really fascinating approach and this thesis based on his hotel, and he has used a lot of ways to get costs down so that he can charge less expensive room rates, because he feels like the generation of consumers just behind my generation, our generation,
They're going to want luxury, and they're going to want things to be well made and well done, locally sourced, but they're going to want value for those things.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to create this business idea. And look, that guy, you know, people talk about Danny Myers often being a trendsetter in the national restaurant temperatures. That guy certainly is that in the hotel segment. So typically what I find is you'll find that the hotels do things a few years before the restaurants do them. But I think restaurants will catch on if they haven't already.
If they have, yeah, and that raises some really interesting questions. And friends, what we're going to do here, we're going to take another little break here on the Noel Drink Show. We're going to come back. We're going to get further into that, some of the financial components. So we are going to talk about summer. I promise we're getting there. We kind of did. But we're going to do that. And I think some of the understanding costs is a very interesting thing that we're going to talk about in operating an independent sit-down restaurant here in New Orleans with implications, really, friends, elsewhere. So friends, coming back to the Noel Drink Show. We're chatting with Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, and we're here at his place, Cavan, on Magazine Street. Come on back.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in. WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and the podcast interwebs across the planet Earth. I like to think that. I'm going to say that anyway. We're chatting with Robert LeBlanc, who is the proprietor, as you know, of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, and we're here at their fine establishment, Cavan Uptown Restaurant. And we're talking, Ro, kind of the meat of what we were going to get into in our ongoing conversation about the restaurant business is we are now essentially in the middle of summer.
Yep.
We're at the tip of the summer here coming in, but it's the heart of the summer, we'll say. We've moved into that period. We're now in early July. This is that game changing time.
Correct.
And we talked about that a couple weeks ago, a little bit about what that means to manage this time coming in. But for example, one of the things that you made me aware of the other day when we were chatting is that offline that June was a little lower in expectation than what people
hoped. I think it was slower than people expected it to be. I think people expect kind of a slow June, but I think this June was slower. We had a tropical storm that basically wiped out a week.
Yep.
And it rained almost every day for the first 2 weeks of June. So yeah, slower, which means a slower summer starts quicker than people thought.
And that can be tough, right? Because we talk about how that it's already, you know, margins are thin to begin with in this business. I think
Correct.
People, you know, maybe don't realize that year round. And then when we move into these summer months, that you have to plan on the fact that these months are going to slow down and be prepared coming into these months.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to plan for it. You know, I think one of the most important things to do is just to understand that everybody's slow. And so, well, you always want to look in the mirror and figure out what you can do to improve. The most dangerous thing that you can do is unnaturally or disproportionately blame yourself, your operation, your team, your whatever. So, you know, city's slow. City was crowded for a long time, and then it slows down. And so I see a lot of people, and look, I'm not saying that the financial pressure is easy. I'm not saying just deal with it or just get over it. I'm very sensitive to that, and I don't want to marginalize anybody's financial pain because it's real, and we experience it as well. But I see a lot of operators just make really dangerous moves to survive the short term. And I get that you have to survive the short term to get to the long term, but you know, they spend 2 or 3 months whacking away at some critical things, trying to cut costs or save money. And then when the season picks up again, the second half of September and October, you're not really prepared for that. And so it's kind of this constant hamster wheel of like adding, cutting. And so,
well, and you said that, Ro, before we went on the air, that I think and one of the key points of this is people will then sometimes, as you said, make rash decisions. So you work hard in the good months to have, just as an example, personnel, a good team in place.
Absolutely.
Right? And then you think, man, this is going to really stink for the next 2 or 3 months, so I've got to cut staff. And you've done a couple things, I'm guessing, right? You've hurt morale, you've let somebody go, you've lost a valuable team
critical
member.
People, right? You've sort of broken up the continuity of the team. And so, you know, when we approach summer, my main concern, more so than making sure we lose $5,000 or $10,000 instead of losing $20,000, just keeping the team together. Yeah. Keep morale up and use it proactively. So we use it, which is the first thing we start with, is let's use this as an opportunity to reset everybody's programs and personal schedules. So if you have some vacation that you like to take some rest, you know, catch up on some sleep from the really busy season where you didn't sleep nearly enough. But also we use it programmatically to retrain. We teach our vision and values again. We kind of go back through what we stand for and the things that we really value in the group. And we try to really engage people in some of the educational context of what we're doing, because you don't really have the bandwidth to do that when it's really busy. So we intensify our wine training programs. We intensify our cocktail training programs. Teach people more about what we're doing with the food menu. Do a lot of sharing our philosophies, kind of why we make decisions. And so when you execute that program, by the time you sort of finish, you're almost to the beginning of September anyway. And so you're kind of through the tough times. But for me, it's about doing whatever it takes to make sure that you keep the team together. And most importantly, to keep the team from beating the crap out of themselves, right?
Right.
People get,
yeah,
that was a slow night. Chef's wondering what he did wrong with the menu. Front of house team's wondering what they did wrong. Everybody's slow. Don't disproportionately blame yourself.
Is this something too, when you bring on a personnel level, HR level, morale level, when you bring somebody in? I know I've met a lot of people, and you know this, you know, folks want to move to New Orleans and work in the restaurant industry, the service industry, and they come from somewhere else. And I always, and you know this, I will meet somebody and they've moved here in May, and I will tell them, it's, if you actually stick here, through the summer, you're going to stick here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But making people, I guess where I'm going, this is like you said, a lot of people, this is a great time where they've saved up some money, and this is when they go on vacation, go to Europe for 2 weeks in August, because that makes more hours for people who need it that are here, and this is a good time to go, so on and so forth. Do you guys actively make people aware of that? I know the culture, I think your team members
we
make people aware of that.
We absolutely do. No, we absolutely talk about that. We also talk about it. It's a really good opportunity for us to re-engage qualitatively with what we're doing at the restaurants. So we pay close attention. We always pay close attention to our qualitative reviews, Facebook, TripAdvisor, Yelp, OpenTable. The summer, it's a little bit slower. So you have more time to spend at tables. You have more time to really engage and get to know people. And the other thing we talk about is get to know our regulars really well again. And when it's really busy during Jazz Fest, during French Quarter Fest, you don't have as much time to spend at a table from a qualitative standpoint. How are you guys? How's the painting going, Sylvia? You know, you guys are going back home to California. It's more, hey guys, good to see you. Really enjoy you guys being here. Thank you so much. And, you know, maybe we can get you a shot at the end of the meal. And that's, we're just too busy to do anything else. And
right.
So for us, summer is the time to reestablish relationships, both with our team, but between the team and the guests, because you have the pace to be able to do that. And so.
And that's important, right?
It's critical.
This is also what keeps things going in the summer, is your local audience.
Yes. And it also buys you time and favor when it's really busy. So when you can't spend as much time because it's busy, or they have to wait an extra 15 or 20 minutes for a table in the busy season, the goodwill that you've generated in the summer by spending so much time, they know who you are. They know you're a good person. They know you're not doing that because you're some flippant, you know, as they call, hipster restaurant who just doesn't care about people. They know you're busy because they spent time with you in the summer. They know who you are.
Right.
And that's important. So we approach summer very proactively with our team and with our guests.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that's some sound advice here, because you do get, in many parts of the world, as we know, and as you said, sort of hipster restaurants, and I even think that there are particular establishments, again, not naming names here in town, that don't get the, and you said it very well at the very beginning of the interview, Robert, with the importance. New Orleans is, in the restaurant business, a quintessential part of this is hospitality. And yes, both for our guests that come from out of town that want to experience it because of the word of mouth it creates and part of the vibe of the city, but secondarily that it doesn't play in this town to act like I'm too cool for school and that makes you want me more.
Correct.
That doesn't work here.
No.
And so providing that hospitality, I think, is quintessential ingredient in what has to happen here. And I think a lot of people still, they come in, they move here, they open up an establishment, and they may miss the mark that way because they don't take that as seriously as they should, bringing that, you know, hipster, whatever, too cool, I'll call it, too cool for school mentality.
Yeah, and look, hospitality is an essential part of becoming a better restaurant that lasts a long time. And the good thing about New Orleans, the challenging thing is, while it takes a little bit longer to get your footing and to get traction, the good thing is once you get it, as long as you don't take it for granted, you'll have it forever.
Right.
You know, some of the best restaurants in the city have been around for almost 100 years, literally. So,
yep.
You know, and the other thing is, people in New Orleans, they know restaurants, they love restaurants. So if you treat it with a sense of hospitality, you'll get the benefit of the doubt when you send out an undercooked piece of fish or an undercooked burger. And they'll also give you the feedback loop on how to make your restaurants better. And so I can say with pride that every single restaurant that we have, most recently Cavan, a year and 3 months into it, is significantly better than it was even last year, much less in Sylvain's case 5 or 6 years ago when it opened. But that's because of the constant feedback loop we get from our guests, who, because of the hospitality, they feel comfortable sharing with us,
right,
both the good things, right, that we're doing properly. That's the most important part of it. Keep doing these things well, because this is why we really like it here, and the times that we need to tighten up. But that sense of hospitality allows us to develop that trusting relationship to get that feedback. And it also, that's where your loyal guest base comes in the summer. And you know, you're not going to print money in the summer, but if you have a loyal guest base from New Orleans, you can, summer's not that painful, but you got to treat people the right way to do that.
And let's talk a little bit more about that, Ro. We'll take another break here. I want to come back and we're going to chat a little bit more about summer. And one of the things, there's several topics that I still want to get to about the hospitality component, but some of the walk-in component and the interesting dynamic that you guys have been experiencing with what's on the books in a given night and then who shows up a little bit later in the evening and how to court that, if you will. So, friends, we're chatting here with Robert LeBlanc, who is the proprietor of LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, and here at one of his great places, Cavan. And we're going to be having a hamburger here later, which I'm pretty excited about. Friends, come on back.
To shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc. A great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Thanks for listening today. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in. We're chatting here at Cavern with Robert LeBlanc, who is the proprietor of the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group. An interesting conversation, as we have been doing on a regular basis and continue to do. I encourage you, if you haven't heard some of the previous conversations, don't want to do a repeat theater here, so go back and catch some of the stuff on the restaurant business. Actually, if you do go to the website, go to noladrinks.com. One of the tags on the posts, I always tag it under restaurant business. So if you click on that, you will see a series of shows that do primarily feature Robert. We've had other good guests, Sean Josephs, proprietor of Kenton's, up the street from us a little bit, and Alex Harrell, who used to work for Roe and is the owner chef at Angeline. And we're having a very honest conversation about the restaurant business here, and that's one of the things, Roe, that I appreciate that you do. And we were just talking during the break here when we took a breather, the idea of the importance of sense of self in what it is that you're doing as a restaurateur, as in any business, but I think in the restaurant industry, and then how that actually sits in the New Orleans landscape. And you had some very interesting things to say, older generation of restaurants, things to learn, but also knowing yourself, and how you can actually operate in the New Orleans landscape. And I think a sense of authenticity, right?
Yeah, I think humility. Authenticity is key. I think there is a degree of humility that must come with being a longstanding restaurant in New Orleans. I mean, it's not a coincidence that the Brennan family is so revered, because if you meet any of those guys, yeah, every one of them, actually, none of them are ostentatious, none of them are arrogant, none of them, some of the kindest, most gracious people. Mm-hmm. You'll ever meet in your life. And so I feel like the leadership team at Galatoire's, Melvin Rodriguez, same way. Brad from Clancy's, kind of the same type of person. So I think there's a lot of lessons for us as this new generation, this new crop of restaurateurs, to learn from those guys. As different as our places are, and I think you would agree that Mobar, Cavern, Barrel Proof, and Sylvain are very different than Clancy's. There's still a lot of great lessons to learn from those guys about who they are and a sense of self and how to treat people. And those guys have been around for years and years and years and have done very well because of those basic principles that I think sometimes our new generation of restaurateurs, and I'm not talking about the New Orleans restaurant community as specifically as I'm talking broadly.
Yes.
A lot of false bravado, a lot of arrogance. And that implies a lack of a sense of self. And so one of the things that we were talking about off air is, I'll always tell you when we're hurting. I'll always tell you when we have a bad month. I'll always tell any peers when we're hurting, because I think it doesn't help anybody to pound your chest and say you're killing it when you're not. When you are, it doesn't help. But even when you're not, that's when it's even more dangerous. And so
Let me ask you a question on that front, because I think one of the things that you and I have talked about a lot, I always use the analogy of the wine industry. When you're playing nicely with your neighbor wineries helps create a wine region. Do you think that it's something that when it happens, if you're telling me that you're killing it, and my restaurant's not doing particularly well, and I'm going, man, what am I doing wrong? And we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but that doesn't help to me the sense of community across the board of trying to elevate the whole landscape, which is good for everybody, right? Rising tide raises all ships.
Right. Well, look, so it doesn't help me if I'm lying to you and I'm telling you that I'm killing it and I'm not, because then people don't want to help me or support me, or people are thinking about breaking the tie. They don't go to my place because I'm killing it,
exactly,
quote unquote, right?
Yep.
And it doesn't help you because it creates a false sense of doubt about what you're doing and who you are. And some of our closest friends are some of the really successful restaurateurs and bar owners in sort of our segment. Neil Bodenheimer and I have very honest conversations. Sean Joseph and I have very honest conversations.
Neil at Keir, just so we know, and then Sean Joseph at Kenton's for listeners.
Alex Harrell at Angeline.
Yep.
Leon and Aaron from Patois. So you know, we've always had a very frank and honest conversation with each other, and I think that has helped us to become better restaurateurs. And I don't think that Sylvain suffers because Patois is still doing well or Kenton's is doing well. And I know for a fact that Cavan hasn't suffered while Kenton's has done well or Cura's done well. And I just think it's kind of small-minded to just be one of these chest-pounding guys. If you're hurting, let people know you're hurting. I mean, everybody wants to help, right? I mean, everybody, that's human nature. And so we all got a lot of help to get to this point. And so I will literally, if anybody emails me and sets up a time or emails me a few questions, I will sit with anybody if I can pay forward literally one-tenth of the help and advice and
it makes sense
that I've gotten from people who came before me.
And if everybody, Rowan, I like what you're saying here. I think it's important to note, and I'm going to use this term, and I don't mean it strictly in the financial sense, but if everyone is solvent, psychologically, financially, you know, morale-wise, when I say psychologically is what I mean, then that is a huge factor in contributing to what is the landscape, maybe even the myth, and the image of New Orleans as a food and drink destination. Do you think that's a fair way to put it with us?
Absolutely. I mean, here's a great example of this, right? So you and Sylvia, it's summer in New Orleans, right? You guys come over from the North Shore and you want to go to dinner tonight. And you walk into a restaurant and it's the slow summer. And so everybody's depressed about it. Everybody's beating the crap out of themselves about how terrible they are. It's just this mopey, downtrodden environment. And you guys go into this restaurant and you have a sort of sour experience. I mean, who wants to kind of make an exception to come home from the North Shore to come and have dinner when it's just, you know, and so what it does to you psychologically, though, as patrons of the restaurant, you don't just sour on that restaurant. You sour on the idea of going to restaurants, at least going to restaurants in the summer. And I will tell you, I do feel like while the summer is slow in New Orleans, I do feel like a degree of it is self-inflicted because people get so negative and they get so depressed that they just don't have any spirit or joie de vivre.
To get out and
kind of give people those great experiences. So if there's only 20 people here tonight and they're supposed to be 60 or 70 or there's 100 in the busy season, those 20 people still chose you over a bunch of other tremendous restaurants in the city of New Orleans. They deserve your best just like the 80 or 100 do that are going to be here in October. Right. And so to take them for granted, which I think happens a lot of times in the summer in New Orleans, to take them for granted is doing a disservice to you and your restaurant, but it's doing a disservice to the restaurant community as a whole, because then people are like, we're just going to stay at home and cook next Monday, right? You're not going to make an effort to come down to the South Shore because it's just not really interesting to go to restaurants in the city. So yes, to your point about everybody being solvent, everybody being upbeat, you know, everybody working together to kind of uplift each other's spirits. Yeah.
That's an interesting point, Ro, because then I think maybe I'll phrase it this way. I like your term self-inflicted. There is a hibernation mode that people then go into here unnecessarily so, perhaps, in the summer.
It's a chicken and an egg, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, people, it's a chicken or an egg thing, but we were talking about this yesterday. I do feel like part of it in the summer in New Orleans, the reason why people don't really go to restaurants in the summer is because it sucks to go to restaurants in New Orleans in the summer. And like, where did that start?
Yeah.
Did that start because there's fewer people, or did that start because there's a sort of an ominous tone in the restaurant?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to answer that question.
That's a very interesting point.
But you have to start somewhere. And so we can start in the restaurant and make sure that we always have an upbeat and positive approach because it is temporary. And the other thing is, it's so weird, is that we have to remember April and May are two of the best months of the year. So you're coming off these two freakishly big months, and then all of a sudden you kind of get to the summer. So it is an unnatural drop off. But if you ever, I tell everybody, we had this conversation with a restaurateur who I'm friends with, an honest conversation. I was like, if you're starting to doubt yourself, just look at what you were doing in May, and that'll tell you who you are.
Right.
Did you have good numbers in May? Did you have good reviews in May? That's who you are. Not in the second week of July.
That doesn't change.
No,
right. That doesn't change.
It didn't change in a month.
Well, one of the things, Ro, that we were talking about here, too, and we got about a minute and a half before we need to take another break, and we'll come back for more. But interestingly, what seems to be kind of going on here at Cavan and your other spot, I know you mentioned Mobar as well, you'll have 12 or 15 on the books. And I think this is somewhat to your point. It's like, man, I only got 12 or 15 on the books tonight. And then you end up with 30 or 45 or something along those lines. So it is, even that short-term negativity can be a problem. And these are locals walking in, right?
Yeah, I mean, mostly. For sure. That's something we actively talk about. We talk about it in all of our restaurants. It's one of our 12 values is, you know, bring your energy to the crowd, no matter how big or small the crowd may be. So those 10, 15 people deserve the same experience that 100 people would deserve on a Monday in October. And so I do think that has become a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that we do pick up business, particularly walk-ins, at all of our restaurants because they know that you can go to Cavan on a Monday and it might not be packed, but it's going to be pretty fun and it'll be pretty energetic and everybody's kind of psyched to be there, and it becomes this thing that grows. And so we've gotten to the point now where we pick up a good bit of walk-ins because it's a place that people know that you can pop into and there's going to be a good, energetic, upbeat mm-hmm. environment.
And as you said, too, it creates an opportunity to actually bond and engage further with your customers who are typically going to be your regulars and your neighbors in a lot of cases.
For sure.
Than you would be able to otherwise.
Absolutely. I mean, that's an opportunity in the summer that we don't get when it's busy during fall season or spring season. You have more time to go in further depth in terms of conversation with your guests. So you get to know them, they get to know them with you, so it strengthens that connection. And that's why we're all here, right? To entertain people and to create human connections and experiences that people will remember for the rest of their lives. You really have the opportunity to do that in summer. You don't have the opportunity to do that during Jazz Fest, 400 more people are pounding through the door.
This is a good example of making lemonade out of lemons, right? And I think that it's a good part about understanding your seasons, understanding where you are, understanding your sense of self, as we've talked about, and then how you turn what might be a competitive disadvantage into an advantage. Friends, we're going to take a little break here. We're chatting with Robert LeBlanc of LeBlanc Smith, and we're going to be right back here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back.
I wonder why my baby drinks so much wine. If she keeps a drinking, she's gonna lose her mind. She's a wine-head woman, don't you know? She's a wine-head woman, don't you know?
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event. Or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Etoile, look here, hein? You see me there? Well, I ain't no fool. I'm one smart Frenchman, never been to school.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. If you're listening on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans, or if you're listening out there in podcast land, wherever you are listening, I appreciate it, as always, that you've tuned into the show. Hope you find today's conversation very interesting. We're chatting with Robert LeBlanc of the LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group, and we're here at one of their fine establishments, as you know, Cavan, and we're talking good stuff, bad stuff, and everything in between as it relates to the restaurant industry with a little bit of a summer flavor going on. As we know, we've talked about this a couple weeks ago. Go listen to that show. That in a lot of cases, New Orleans is kind of inverted from other places in that the summer are the slow months and outside of that are the better months. And a lot of places, as we know, it's the opposite. If you're from some of those other places, you know what I'm talking about. Not hard to imagine. But one of the things that you were talking about, engaging with your summer customers, using that as an opportunity during this time of year, as opposed to seeing it as a detriment. And I think we do see, I mean, really a couple things here. One, to the point, you will go into certain places, and when places aren't as busy and people are a little bit disaffected, I'll say, some of the team members in certain restaurants, and I come in and maybe, I'm the only person with my lovely wife, Sylvia, and we're sitting at the bar, and the bartender's on their phone.
Yeah.
Right, that kind of thing.
Right,
and it's one thing if they're on the phone and we're all sharing Instagram pictures that we're all sharing, but another thing where you give me my drink, you walk away, you're just leaning on the bar, and you're on the phone. That's not taking advantage of the opportunity to maybe talk with who your guests are a little bit and cultivate some loyalty and goodwill.
Yeah, absolutely, and that carries you through the busy seasons, right? Those same people come back through the busy season, and you don't have as much time to talk to them when it's slammed, and so it gives you the opportunity to develop relationships that carry you through the whole year. It also gives you the opportunity to tell stories about who we are as a restaurant and some of the things that we're working on and who you are individually. And those are the things that matter. Those are the things that people really grab onto, is the idea of stories. And so as much as we hope to tell great stories when it's busy, sometimes you don't have the depth of conversation to be able to do that. And so the summer, that's another way. It's a really strong opportunity from a marketing standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when you proactively program the team to do these things, then it becomes summer's sort of, it's not as busy from a sales standpoint or a volume standpoint, but it's still busy. There's still a lot of energy and buzz around what we're doing. It's just not executing service with guests in the room.
Right.
A lot of training, a lot of learning programs and educational stuff, but it's fun.
That's fun. And, yeah, and it does. It's creating some opportunity here to take advantage of what's handed to you. One of the things that we were talking about right before we went on the air that I think is really interesting is that you guys, and you use the word programmatically, have deliberately cultivated is the idea of leaving some of the table inventory, calling it inventory, where you can come into the restaurant and sit, leaving a little bit open so that you will get walk-ins. And we touched on that a little bit, where you have 12 on the books and you end up with 45. Okay, there are times too when you have 45 on the books and you want people to still be able to walk in.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. So this kind of started more with the idea of, we happened upon this luckily. It started with the idea of being, we want to be neighborhood restaurants. So every one of our restaurants, we want everybody to feel comfortable, but we really want to be a place that sort of caters to and is sourced by the neighborhood itself. And so to do that, I think you need a couple things. You need a big bar where people feel comfortable eating alone.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a knowledgeable bar team who knows not only the wines and the cocktails, but they also know the food so that you can engage people. And you have to have the ability for people to walk in at any time. And so when we started Sylvain, we would only book 70% of the inventory. So you always had tables that were available for people to kind of walk in. Now, when it gets really busy, sometimes those 30% are filled by walk-ins. And so there might be a little bit of a wait, but you can always get a table if you're willing to wait 15, 20, 30 minutes at our restaurants, even on the busy nights. And what that has done, the unintended consequence of that, and I think some of it has to do with the way that we try to program things to be upbeat and fun and pretty accessibly priced, but a lot of it is you sort of train to teach people that they can always come in and just grab a table. And we have, the byproduct of that is we have these, a lot of nights, we typically at least double what we have on the books, but sometimes we'll triple what we have on the books with walk-ins because people have become accustomed to being able to kind of pop in at any time. And so it's just one of those things that they subconsciously just know, so if I'm just going to pop in without a reservation, I'm going to pop in the cabin because I know I can always get a great seat at the bar and I'll talk to Noel or I'll talk to Jack.
Mm-hmm.
We started that to be a neighborhood restaurant, and the idea of, to be a great neighborhood restaurant, you have to be able to just walk over from right. a neighboring home or business and pop in. But it really helped us generate a lot of walk-in business, and we experienced that at all of our restaurants.
And that's and you're saying this, but just to be very clear, this again is another mechanism that is going to, I'm going to make up some number, there's no science behind this, but this is going to be 80 or 90% catering to your local audience.
For the most part, yeah. Because people coming in from out of town typically plan their trips ahead of time and make reservations. But you do get that. And what we feel a lot of times at Mobar in particular is people who have restaurant reservations somewhere in the neighborhood will get recommended to Mobar
right.
or to Sylvain to have a drink afterwards. So we still pick up a lot of walk-ins just for bar business. But yeah, it's been tremendously beneficial to us, and that really helps you. So to be honest, we probably lose a little bit of sales on Fridays and Saturday nights by not selling all the tables out online ahead of time. But we more than make up for that by picking up pretty strong Monday through Thursdays and picking up walk-ins when you otherwise would be slow, because people understand you can kind of pop in anytime and get a table.
And creating customer loyalty, as you said.
For sure.
This is a big deal to me, too. It's sort of the idea that, hey, you know, I always come from a wine industry angle, but running, you know, background in running wineries. Part of the goal is you always want to get people in your wine club, right? That gets your regular yep. quarterly shipment or whatever it is that you do. And I would also observe in doing training with people that it was all or nothing. I either got you in the wine club or I could sort of care less. And to me, there was still a great concept that even though maybe you didn't join the wine club, if I made you a repeat customer, meaning, hey, maybe you come to the winery twice a year, that is still better than a one and done. And that is still somebody who you maybe eventually do get into the wine club.
Sure.
So the idea, I think, here, what we're talking about is that generating loyalty, generating repeat customers, especially, you know, and when I say local audience too, I think we know one of the interesting dynamics in New Orleans, and I'll include this group, and we know a lot of people that are friends of ours, row in common, that maybe they don't live in New Orleans, but they're here two, yeah. three, four, five, six times a year. I'm going to put those people in that Agreed. Group too, that yep. know the walk-in thing. And this is cultivating regular. So maybe they don't come in dine with you every week or once a month. But if they come twice a year, that's still a win.
Absolutely. And it also, it becomes home to them. And so it's a win because they come twice a year. That's amazing. Where you really win is they go back to Houston, or they go back to Shreveport, or they go back to Memphis or Mobile, and that's their spot. So we get that at Sylvain all the time. We get people who pop in at the bar and we're like, Brian and Sylvia, we live on the North Shore. We, you know, saw Brian and Sylvia at the wine store, and they told us we just had to come to Sylvain, or we had to come to Cavan. And so,
yep.
You know, those people become their loyal guests, but they also become your best ambassadors.
Absolutely.
And those connections, those synapses, they work. I mean, they really work. So, and there's a lot of restaurants that I would consider this new generation. So I kind of consider restaurants that sort of in our demographic that opened after Katrina that are still going really strongly, and they have all benefited from that phenomenon. Cure is a great example of that. It's a bar, but that's a perfect example of that. I think that Pat's Bois is a fantastic example of that. Hopefully Sylvain's a good example of that. Mm-hmm, I think Mobar is pretty much well on its way to doing that. And so I think Chris Hanna has done a fantastic job with the French 75 bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it works.
Yeah,
it helps.
That makes a huge difference, friends. I think it's a really big deal. And we've covered our ground here pretty well. I know we're going to come back. One of the things that I know do you have time to do one more segment?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's get into this now, and then because we got about a minute and a half, we'll take a break, and then we'll do another segment. And we're going to shift gears a little bit. We're going to kind of go financial here. There are some interesting tax burdens that have gone on in New Orleans on restaurants for everyone, really.
Yeah.
Operating in Orleans Parish and living in Orleans Parish. But it's kind of ramped up a little bit, and that can make these things tough. And it's like these things don't stop during the summer.
Right. Yeah. That's not something we can control as restaurateurs, but I do think that we have a lot more, a lot stronger voice, and sometimes we let out. Obviously largest employer, probably the largest generation of sales tax dollars.
It's a quintessential part of tourism is the thing here, right?
For sure.
And so much of the tourism is built on the hospitality industry, food and beverage industry. That's one of the primary selling points of the tourism industry.
And I think that for a while, the city of New Orleans was like, that's just the cost of doing business here. Just eat it. You know, you just deal with it. And as an operator, honestly, whether it was good or bad, we just ate it. We sucked it up and dealt with it. Now I think it's time to start barking back. And I think where it's particularly loud is this crime issue. And that's a real issue. We're losing conventions as a result of it. You're not going to hear that from the city. They're spending it well, but we are losing conventions. And if you don't think that people are going to think twice about sending 25,000 executives down here because two of them just got jumped and one of them was on his deathbed for a while, then you're kidding yourself. And so it's time to start working together. We generate a lot for the city in terms of goodwill, brand ambassadorship, revenues, taxes, jobs. We got to start doing a better job, and the LRA does a fantastic job of that. We have to start as individuals doing a better job, kind of linking arms and taking some of these issues on.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break here. We're talking about LRA as the Louisiana Restaurant Association. We're going to come back and chat a little bit more with Earl LeBlanc. Come on back.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers!
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley.
California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the Small Plates and Charcuterie Kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till it's through our soul. It takes all that long.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in here to the show today. Hope you're enjoying it. We are chatting with Robert LeBlanc. I hope you're enjoying it, and I hope you're also finding it informative. We always like to be honest here on the Noel Drink Show. It's one of the reasons why I like to have Robert as a guest, is that he is very candid about everything in the restaurant industry, owning and operating restaurants, the landscape here in New Orleans, and some of these things. And this is what we just left off, as you know, before the break, a touchy subject here. We've had an uptick of crime, and I think maybe one of the things too, and I don't know how you feel about this, I don't want to New Orleans has garnered in recent years post Katrina a lot more attention in the media,
sure,
for tourists, things like that,
sure.
You know, crime has always been a part of New Orleans like anywhere, and so on and so forth, but so, I think whereas it was not making national news, we now have these situations where it's making national news.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
This has an effect, as you were saying, on business.
Yeah, I mean, people have a vested interest. You know, everybody across the country, across the world, really cared about New Orleans and gave to New Orleans and helped New Orleans in this recovery. Everybody's vested. They're emotionally invested. So they're all naturally paying attention to what's going on. So even though it feels like a relatively small city, it gets big, right. 10 million visitors, but it's still a small city. You know, the world's watching, and they're expecting us to be better than we were before all of this support and investment came into the city, and I think we need to honor that. And so I agree with you, the visibility around crime is higher, but that's because people care more and people are paying more attention because
right.
they gave to
right.
us
right.
in abundance and helped us to recover and rebuild. So they have a piece of us, and we've benefited from that love for New Orleans, and we still do tremendously. So we can't just put that down when it shines a negative light on us. We have to own that part of it too.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that maybe what also coincides, and you and I have chatted about this offline, maybe we even touched it on one of the shows, is that the goodwill, the sheen, I'll even use maybe the word novelty, trendiness, whatever we want to call it, that New Orleans garnered in that wake of Katrina, that can't go on forever. People can't,
no.
You know, I'm not saying that the city's
no.
going to go away, its appeal's going to go away or anything like that, but I think that was almost sort of banked on that, you know, everybody's watching Tremé. right. on HBO. Right. And this is that gravy train's not going to last forever. So some of these things that are have been and continue to be manifest, like crime, maybe perhaps some taxation that's resting on the backs of the service industry and on the restaurant and hospitality industry. You kind of can't keep going to the well too many times here before the well runs dry.
Look, I think I'm as pro New Orleans as anybody. I mean, our company is built on kind of pro New Orleans sentiments and beliefs. I always felt like our neighborhood restaurants are so high touch. I would never do something outside of New Orleans. I'm honestly looking at doing projects outside of New Orleans pretty actively now because I'm just concerned if we have if the convention business falls off 15-20%. That's tremendous huge. Swath.
And for listeners, just so the road, sorry to interrupt. I mean, just so people know, the convention bit, so I'm grouping all of this in with the larger tourism component, but the portion of that made up by the convention business is astronomical.
Astronomical. And that hits the top tier of restaurants. That right. hits the yep. you know the highest grossing restaurants. And so, you know, while the overall market downturn typically affects the lowest performing restaurants disproportionately high, and the top tier of restaurants are pretty much unscathed from that, that's not the case if we lose this convention business. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's unfortunate, but it's kind of becoming a necessary part of our business strategy to do one or two things outside of New Orleans in case there is another violent crime or a couple more violent crimes in the French Quarter. And I think we are at that tipping point. I mean, I think we're one or two really bad crimes away from conventions in general. You know, the other thing that's gone on across the country is even if New Orleans has continued to gain steam, and it's an amazing city, it really is. So I don't want to sit here on the platform and I'm banging on New Orleans.
Right, right.
Giving me
nothing's perfect, though. We have to continue to address our problems, right? You know, I mean.
But the reality of it is there's a lot of other southern cities that have kind of caught up to New Orleans in a lot of ways. Austin, Texas, Nashville, Charleston, South Carolina, to a lesser degree, Savannah, Georgia. And so, you know, if the risk becomes too high relative to the reward of going to New Orleans, then people are going to start going. It's easier to go to Nashville than it was 15 years ago right. to experience great food and great music and a lot of the things that were New Orleans' bread and butter. And that's the dangerous part of it. So I don't think New Orleans is never going to die. It's never going to be a wholesale sell-off of New Orleans. But it only takes 10 or 15% of a decline in convention business or that tourism business that supports the top tier of what we're doing for the whole thing to kind of not necessarily come crumbling down, but to take a severe blow to the chin.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. It is something that has to be addressed effectively. And this show is not necessarily about crime and other, you know, we all know where a lot of this can come from is inequality and things like that go on in the city. And that's not what we're really talking about here today, but just the manifest component of this as it relates to the restaurant business. And Roque, just since we brought it up, I do want to touch on this before we close out the segment. With the taxation stuff, it is perhaps maybe something where, you know, it's the one industry that's the bright light. It's the shining light. It's what's driving sure. a lot of the economy here. But you can't keep going
you
to that.
You can't keep
well
going.
Either.
I think we're at the point, we're about the tipping point. We were, again, like the crime situation. I think if they try to do it one more time, you're going to have some great operators who are just, they might maintain what they have here. But people who would reinvest and redevelop buildings, they're just not going to do it anymore because you can't. It's not, it's you know, it's as much the emotional effect as it has on you that they just don't regard you or they don't respect you or they just feel like you can deal with it as it is the financial implications. And the financial implications are big. You
right.
know, we're paying 50 cents more or guests are paying 50% more per dollar in the French Quarter for the protection that's doesn't really exist, right? I mean,
yes,
so
that's
so,
right. That return on investment is what's really important. If you're going to be paying that, then you're expecting that return on investment. And, you know, it's, I think everybody understands what we're talking about here, but it's kind of one of these things, if we want to look at the sort of a medieval concept where, you know, it's like, oh, we're just going to go tax the peasants further, right? Or, you know, the farms are doing really well, so we're going to take an extra bushel mm-hmm. of grain twice a year as, you know, and this sort of thing. And it's robbing Peter to pay Paul at a certain point.
For sure. And I think one thing that the people don't give enough credence to in terms of the value of the hospitality industry to New Orleans, the obvious ways, cultural ambassadors, drives the economy, but the less obvious ways too, and then a lot of really, really intelligent, really high energy people who are starting amazing nonprofits that are having great impact, that are starting right. amazing companies here, they're able to do that in New Orleans because they can buy a year or 2 years of income by working in these bars and restaurants in New Orleans while they set up their nonprofit or while they get their business off the ground. And that's a real thing. And so you don't want to lose that. You don't want to compromise that. It's very delicate to the future of New Orleans.
That's a really good point, because, and that's a really good point, Robert, because we're talking about this industry contributing in other ways to the greater diversification of the economic portfolio in the city.
Yep.
And I think people probably don't realize that as well. And actually, as you said it that way, it does make me think about that. A lot of the folks that I know that are on your team at your establishment do other things.
Absolutely.
You know, we have a lot of people that are musicians that work, you know, in your establishments, because it's, you know, tough to make a full-time living as a musician in New Right. Orleans, believe it or not, you know, and these sorts of things. And so these people are actually adding considerable amounts to both the cultural economy of New Orleans as well as the financial economy
Correct.
Of New Orleans.
Yep. Yeah, it's important. And so it's a very delicate ecosystem. I think that the administration needs to do a better job paying attention to everything it's got in the hospitality industry here in New Orleans.
Yeah,
for absolutely. Sure.
Well, Ro, do me a favor, as we close this out here, and our timing is perfect because the bar is now open and we have patrons rolling into Cavern, which is a cool thing to see. Tell people where Cavern is and where they, you know, when you're all open and when come eat
yeah,
and drink.
Yeah, so Cavern is open 7 nights a week. We start happy hour at 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock start serving dinner. It's at 3607 Magazine Street. So it's the portion of Magazine between Louisiana and Napoleon. If you're driving from downtown up Magazine Street, it's about 3 blocks on the right hand side, 3 blocks past Louisiana.
Yep. And a great place, beautiful dining area and a bar downstairs, and then a really absolutely beautiful bar where you can get food service
Thank
as well
you.
Upstairs.
Yeah, and that website is www.cavernola.com.
Cavernola.com, and you guys are all on all the social media interwebs as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Bro, thanks so much. I appreciate
you. Thank you, man. It was awesome.
Yeah,
as always.
We'll revisit this again. We're going to get further down these issues. It's an ongoing, regular topic, as you know, here on the NOLA Drink Show.
And, absolutely.
Robert is a big part of that. So, friends, we're going to take a little break. We're going to be back to close things out with some parting shots and all that kind of stuff. And maybe I'll say something intelligent. Unlikely. Come on back.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
The green room is smoking and the lab is running down.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Thanks for tuning in today. Once again, if you're listening here on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans here on a Thursday afternoon, now coming up on the early evening hours, I very much appreciate it. And if you are listening wherever you may be to our podcast, I appreciate that too. You can always get the podcast on iTunes, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, and now recently added to Stitcher. We're also streaming on TuneIn, and you can always go to noladrinks.com where you can find the latest podcasts, the last 10 episodes. If you click on the upper right-hand corner of the website, you'll see a microphone and an icon there. It says podcast. If you click on that, you can subscribe to us. You can stream it. The last 10 episodes are there. You can download that sort of thing. More information on
where you can find us. We appreciate that. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, all those good places. Do check us out on the Facebook page. We always like to hear comments. If you have an idea for a topic or topics you'd like us to address here on the NOLA Drink Show, we're happy to do so. Always fun. I mention this almost every week, but fun to check out where listeners, in this case, the podcast, where you're tuning in from. And always like to give a shout out to some of our friends there. So, of course, again, once again, great support in Japan. Thank you for listening all the way there across the big pond in the Pacific. Lots of folks in Italy, in Greece lately as well, which I really appreciate. So we're always very happy here on the NOLA Drink Show to share a little slice of our world in New Orleans. I think, you know, it's an interesting place, as you probably know. If you're listening to the show, you have some interest in it or in addition to or also the world of drink and food, which we like to talk about. Certainly, we talk a lot about stuff in New Orleans, but not exclusively. Talk about lots of different things as well. I hope you found the conversation with Robert LeBlanc from LeBlanc Smith Restaurant Group interesting. I didn't mention this in the beginning of the show, but I'm guessing that you probably gathered, because we mentioned it during the segments. We actually recorded that on Monday, as you probably heard, on July 3rd over at one of their nice spots, Cavan. So that was done a little bit before here today on the Thursday. You know, it's a lot of important things we touched on. And as I said, we will certainly come back to these topics in before the summer is over. It is a tough time for these businesses. And, you know, I want to highlight one of the things here. We started to touch on, and we'll get further into this topic, I know we will, some of the financial components, not the least of which is taxation. And there's been a lot of taxation in Orleans Parish, which is the county or parish, which is basically New Orleans, okay? And a lot of local taxes have been levied on local businesses, property owners, you know, and so restaurants are obviously not exempt from this. And it has affected a lot of those that provide, in the service industry, basically the hospitality industry, those that own those types of businesses, bars, restaurants, as well as others. But that's more or less what we focus on here on this show. And as we pointed out, and this is what I want to highlight, is that New Orleans is dependent on tourism. And much of that tourism is dependent on the hospitality industry. People come here to enjoy the drink and the food, which, as we know, if we're here or if you've been here, is an integral part of the culture. Of course, music, these things as well. But when you come to New Orleans, it's not about, you know, we're not talking about riding amusement park rides here and getting a second or third rate hot dog. Okay, you come here because you want to enjoy the culture. And as I said, that means food and drink and music and these things. And that's what supports the tourism industry. And that is what supports the local economy. The convention business, as we touched on, is a big part of that. And the conventions really kind of stop, but they slow way down. They basically stop in the summer months. We talked about how crime has potentially affected that a little bit. And people, you know, these are tens of thousands of people in some instances that come here. And we touched on that. And that can be a big problem. And then we have the summer months when we're in hurricane season. Basically, I believe insurance underwriters will not insure conventions during certain periods of time, or at least it's outrageously expensive to do so. So people don't book for fear of having to cancel a convention that are often booked for 3, 4, 5, 6 years in advance because of a tropical storm. So the summer, again, the summer months can be really high. The taxes that are being levied, some of these things, these people are already operating in the hospitality industry on a pretty thin margin to begin with. So if you have not planned, as Robert was saying and said on the show a couple weeks ago and in other times, you have to plan for the summer months. That includes the people that work in the service industry, all of this kind of stuff. We have to embrace the importance of events like Essence coming to town, Tales of the Cocktail coming to town, Satchmo Fest coming to town, because this provides a much needed lift to our economy during these months. So again, I hope you found it interesting. We will revisit those topics in the near future, and let us know if there's a particular angle that you want us to discuss as it relates to the restaurant business, and we'll keep reporting on how it goes here through the summer. It's always pretty interesting. We talked about how June was a worse month than expected because of the tropical storm that we had in the area about a week and a half ago. So anyway, there you go. Wanted to mention another event coming up this weekend. Of course, it is the San Fermin in Nuevo Orleans Festival, and I said that with a French accent even though it's Spanish. It is our nod here in the New Orleans area to the Encierro, which is, of course, the running of the bulls in Pamplona, Spain. And that over in Spain, it's my understanding, I've never had the chance to go. It's a week-long festival, and it starts in the morning from July 7th and then goes through July 14th. We start to run into an important day here that has a nod to our French culture, Bastille Day. So what we do a weekend. We do a San Fermin festival here for a weekend.
and we do the running of the bulls, which in this case, it's really not the running of the bulls. That's tomorrow morning. What I mean by that is we don't have bulls. We actually have the roller derby gals from New Orleans and other places that come, and they are the bulls. And they have these soft little foam bats, and you run like you do with the running of the bulls. Got to wear white, got to wear a red scarf, and got to wear a red belt or tie around your waist. And if you're slow, then the gals on roller skates come up behind you and can whack you in the backside with a soft foam bat. Doesn't hurt. It's a lot safer than getting gored by a bull, I promise you. That is tomorrow morning. Starts pretty early. The running kicks off at 8 a.m. sharp. Some of the festivities begin actually at 7:15 in the morning. The $15 registration fee. Wanted to highlight it. I'll tell you where to go find more information on this in just a second. Wanted to highlight also a dinner going on tonight. There is a four-course dinner. That's this evening, Thursday, July 6th at 6:30, and that is at the Bourbon Orleans Hotel in the Orleans Ballroom. It is the San Fermin and the Bicentennial of New Orleans Ballroom. There it is. That's where it's taking place. But it is the San Fermin Festival, and it is a feast. Four-course dinner. It's a $99. They're going to have some really great stuff going on. You're encouraged to wear red and white. So that's check that out. You can go to the Bourbon Orleans Hotel website and make reservations through them. If you're interested in more stuff going on with the Festival of San Fermin here in New Orleans, just go to, probably the best place to go is neworleansonline.com, or you can search Running of the Bulls New Orleans. You get a good result there on Google. The Encierro, which is E-N-C-I-E-R-R-O in Nueva Orleans. And again, I'm saying with the French accent, should be Spanish. I speak Spanish relatively well. I'm just totally messing that up. But it's a lot of fun, and there's stuff going on all weekend. There's stuff on Saturday and Sunday and whatnot. There's also tomorrow in the evening, there's the Chupinazo, which goes on so it's Friday, as I said. That's from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Little Gem Saloon right there on Poydras, and I guess Poydras and South Rampart. And, there's going to be music, food you can buy, things like that, an open bar, good stuff like that. And there's probably a ticket price there. But go check on New Orleans online.com and just search for San Fermin and Nueva Orleans Festival Running of the Bulls. You'll get the information that you need there. One little bit of news here from the beer world. A new strand of yeast has been discovered. Pretty cool. This is the first time that a new strand of yeast relevant to beer has been found since 2011. There is an organization called the National Collection of Yeast Cultures, which this is at the University of Manchester in the UK. They collected the yeast, and it was actually growing at a height of over 1,000 meters above sea level in Saint-Alban in France. It's the foothills of the French Alps there. Is that in France? Probably. But it's in the French. It's got to be. If it's in the French Alps, of course, unless it's on the other side. Okay, I'm going to mess that whole geography up. Don't listen to me. But the yeast has adapted to the altitude and is able to tolerate cooler temperatures than most other strains of the Saccharomyces yeast, which is, of course, what we want for beer. Pretty cool. This has a particular interest potentially to those that make lagers, because lagers, unlike ales, it's a cold process. Right? Lagers are usually fermented at a cool temperature, and then they're cold stored. And actually, I just learned this. The German word for lager, what it means, translates to storeroom or warehouse. The yeast strain that's most commonly used in lager production is one called Pastorianus. There you go. But this one seems to have some viability because it has adapted to the cold. Again, 1,000 meters above sea level. Of course, about 3,000 plus feet above sea level there. The NCYC, the yeast house that I mentioned, the storage place, they have over 4,000 different strains of yeast basically stored there, cataloged. They know what they do. They're doing some DNA sequencing on this yeast. But again, it might be something that's particularly of interest to those that make lagers. And one little interesting note, too, that I just learned in reporting the story, too, which is originally reported in the drinks business, I should mention, is that some scientists estimate that as little as 10% of the world's yeasts have so far been discovered. So who knows what we can do with bread and beer and booze and everything else once we discover that other 90%, or even little ticks as we go. Friends, thanks so much here for listening to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Always a pleasure to chat with you, and I hope you come back next week. We're going to plan some stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about Tales of the Cocktail, which is coming up the week after next, and then once we get to that point, we're going to do a lot. We got a lot of special stuff going on with Tales of the Cocktail. We're going to be covering that event top to bottom, left to right. It's going to be a great time. So again, friends, I really appreciate you tuning in. Take care of yourselves. Have a great weekend, and until then, cheers, y'all.